This is Bucky McCaw with the Backyard Chicken Broadcast. Last week, I answered some questions from a listener named Carolyn in Brooklyn, New York. Carolyn says I won her over with my agenda of the redistribution of chickens from overcrowded, inhumane, disease-spreading factories to small flocks and yards and public spaces across the nation, including, and maybe even especially, in our cities. She knows that chickens in her yard will provide fertilizer, soil improvement, and pesticide control that will help her grow her own vegetables, which will be tastier and more nutritious than that which she can get from corporate sources. She knows that she'll have eggs that are much, much more nutritious and delicious than grocery store eggs, and will be, not just in name, but in actual fact, cruelty-free. And of course, she's heard about and even witnessed what wonderful personalities chickens have when they're raised in healthy and respectful conditions. Last week, we discussed her questions about size-appropriate breeds, whether to start with fertilized egg, chick, or young chickens, and whether she should or could keep roosters. For more information on what you missed, go to buckybacaw.org. In the meantime, let's talk about Carolyn's concern that there are feral and pet cats that sometimes roam her neighborhood. Would chickens be a danger in her yard, she asks. Ideally, you don't want strange cats prowling around your flock. A good fence and whatever other measures you can take to discourage cats is a bonus. But generally, during the day, chickens can hold their own against cats. Roosters in particular, but also hens, have an instinctive ability to bluff, as well as some very real fighting skills that a much larger cat will respect. Especially when more than one chicken team up to fight off the cat. Smaller chickens might be less intimidating, but tend to have somewhat improved ability to fly, which means they can't be caught easily and will exhaust most felines. Especially if they have a tree with low branches or other elevated roosts they can utilize. Cats can't climb or leap as fast as chickens. However, cats may not be the only potential predators in your neighborhood. Stray dogs are a distinct possibility, especially now that so many people in the city have dogs. Dogs are even less maneuverable than cats, but can be even more determined hunters, so fencing is key. Predatory birds, hawks, falcons, and eagles are a factor in New York City. Chickens are instinctually cautious about anything that flies over their heads, so if you provide them with daytime cover, a coop they can run into, bushes to hide in, that'll help a lot. But I'm pretty sure that New York's predatory birds will probably be prioritizing the many prey animals that live in more open areas, such as rooftops, parking lots, and parks, before they start trying to figure out how to swoop through trees and electrical wires into a claustrophobic city yard. Rats and snakes won't eat your chickens. In fact, some large chicken breeds eat rodents and snakes. But those would probably be too big for your space, as we discussed on last show. However, rats and snakes will eat eggs or newborn chicks, mess up the nest, and stress your chickens out. Keep your hen house clean, remove eggs promptly, and watch for any signs of trouble, so you can take preventive measures right away. I'd recommend that when you first start off with chickens, you keep them in an enclosed run when they're unsupervised. After you get a sense of the cat and predator situation, and how tough your little flock is, you can experiment with letting the chickens free range a bit. No matter what, it is essential that your hens have a predator-proof place to sleep. Once the sun goes down, chickens basically turn into zombies and lose all self-defense abilities. The city has larger populations of nocturnal hunters, like raccoons, possum, and fox, than most people realize. There are all kinds of living prey and stuff for them to scavenge, but sooner or later, one will sniff out your coop. If they can't get to your chickens the first time, they may not come back. But once they do, they'll remember your yard for a long time and stay on the lookout for an opportunity. If you are sure of your predator situation, you can plan accordingly. My first flock was protected by neighboring dogs on all sides of our fenced yard, and kept nocturnal predators out. I highly recommend building or buying something that is pretty much impenetrable. Wood or thick plastic or small hole chicken wire on all sides, including underneath, or buried fairly deep along the sides, and a latch that a raccoon can't figure out. My experience is that predator-proofing is actually a lot more difficult for country folk. One of the advantages of urban and suburban chickening is you can often stick to the most effective, basic security measures. Carolyn rightly wonders not only about keeping predators out, but about keeping chickens in when she asks about chickens' ability to fly the coop. While chickens' flight skills are limited, it's amazing how resourceful a determined hen can be if she gets it in her head to go exploring. In my experience, you've got a good chance of outsmarting the chicken and keeping them in your yard, but that's another reason to keep your unsupervised chickens in an enclosed run at first. Then maybe let them free range while you watch them on the sly from a window and see what they're capable of. Some folks clip their chickens' wings. Limiting their ability to fly doesn't always guarantee they won't find a way out, but it does mean they can't fly away from predators. Chickens will be more likely to accept boundaries they grew up with, one of the advantages of starting with new chicks. And a chicken with adequate food, water, and companionship who is happy and engaged in her surroundings may not even be tempted to fly the coop. Carolyn also asks, what do you do about chickens in the New York City winter? Winterizing for your flock is another topic discussed on previous shows and on my website, buckybacaw.org. Most chicken breeds are pretty cold hardy. Outdoor chickens are common in cities and places much colder than New York. The important thing is, again, proper shelter. Your coop must be windproof. It should have a roosting area above the cold ground where two or more chickens can huddle together and share their warmth. It should be the right size or have an enclosed nesting area to build up heat. Many experienced chickeners report that their chickens have survived sub-zero temperatures in a proper coop. But if you're ever in doubt, I recommend taking your flock inside for the night. You can keep them in a small indoor cage during sleeping hours. There really is no need for a heated coop. However, you should figure out a way to make sure they have access to fresh water, not ice, during the day. If you're gone for long stretches, you may want to look into heated water trays. Hens are legal in New York City, and most cities for that matter, as long as you have few enough so your neighbors can't make a valid noise or smell complaint. And there are actually more hens than you'd think already living in cities like New York. Chickeners, like me, develop a sort of chicken radar, or hendar, that allows us to sniff out chickens in our neighborhood. But new chickeners should poke around chicken blogs and websites and local urban agriculture groups to seek out the more experienced pioneers who can give you advice that addresses your area, even your neighborhoods. Like chickens, people who live with chickens are a sociable bunch. We're all signed on to the Bucky Agenda, so join us. And don't be intimidated by the false notion that chicken care is some kind of specialized, arcane peasant farmer or factory farm knowledge. This is Bucky Bacaw. I had a good time. Bucky Bacaw's Backyard Chicken Broadcast was produced by the Sagebrush Variety Show with support from Boise Community Radio and the Green Institute.
Peak Oil Check-In, exploring the end of the age of oil.
Biology professor David Ehrenfeld, when he was a medical student, was part of a small group of students meeting with a celebrated cardiologist, who was then in his 80s. One of the students exclaimed that heart disease was the number one cause of death in the United States. Ehrenfeld recounts, "Our teacher thought about this for a while and answered, 'What would you prefer to have as a number one cause of death?' 'Death is inevitable,' the cardiologist seemed to suggest, 'not a problem to be solved by preventing its number one cause.' I think about the cardiologist's question when looking at the current financial meltdown. Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson has earnestly explained this past week that bad lending practices are the number one cause of the collapse of the U.S. financial system. What would he prefer to have as a primary cause of the collapse? Unlike human death, economic collapse is not inevitable. However, the U.S. economy has long been on a trajectory towards such massive change that collapse is not too strong a word. Our country has squandered its post-World War II prosperity, much of it on investments unsuited to the 21st century. The U.S. overextended itself, building a system of interstate highways and smaller roads and bridges that neither the states nor the federal government can seem to find the money to maintain. When we're lucky, locally vital bridges are closed before they collapse, as has happened twice in the last few months here in Vermont. When we're unlucky, as they were in Minneapolis last year, an 8-lane bridge collapses while filled with rush hour traffic. James Howard Kunstler, author of The Long Emergency, has called post-war sprawl perhaps the greatest misallocation of resources the world has ever known. Suburbs and the isolated country homes that we have so many of in Vermont require large infusions of oil. Oil moves people back and forth to work, play, shopping, and worship. Oil brings in food and goods, and carries away garbage. As oil production reaches a peak, and then declines, Kunstler expects sprawl to leave a legacy of ghost suburbs and radically altered living arrangements. Those suburbs that are not abandoned will be sparsely occupied, with lawns turned into mini-farms. Proud family McMansions will be subdivided into apartments by owners who can't afford to live in them alone. People will be concentrated along rail or bus lines, and those left living in the countryside will be isolated, their trips to town infrequent at best. The collapse of the housing bubble and high energy prices are already starting to realize Kunstler's expectation. Subdivisions are being abandoned, half-built, and home values are dropping faster in outlying areas than in or near city centers. Kunstler's background is in theater, journalism, and writing novels and nonfiction books. Numerous people with much different, more technocratic backgrounds have come to similar conclusions about the underlying economic trends. They come from top government contractors, Vice President Dick Cheney's secretive energy task force, and even Congress itself. What's the best way to spend our monies as the industrial economy and whole patterns of living are dramatically rearranged? Not on bailing out automakers, as Congress just allocated $25 billion towards. We need strong investment in efficiency, converting to renewable energy, strengthening local agriculture, better rail and other public transit, and anything that builds stronger communities and protects the most vulnerable. Personal investment in preparedness is important, too. Warren Buffett thinks this is a time to invest $5 billion in Goldman Sachs. Me? I finally ordered that cider press I'd been eyeing. And I'm thinking of joining the co-op formed by some neighbors for a small-scale dry bean thresher and winnower. And I'm learning local wild edibles at Wisdom of the Herb School and using permaculture design principles to turn our yard into a woodland garden. So what do I want the primary cause of U.S. financial collapse to be? Well, I can better answer the question of how I prefer to see the collapse happen. I'd like to see it happen slowly, with enough small scares to wake people up to the scale of the problem, while we still have significant resources to invest in a transition to a post-oil economy. I'd like to see financial collapse treated as an opportunity for neighbors to help neighbors, for communities to meet the challenge of providing essential goods and services for themselves. And I'd like to see us sing and dance and laugh together as we make the transition. If we're going to change almost everything about our lives, we might as well have some fun doing it. I'm Carl Ettenayer, and that's this week's Peak Oil Check-In.
Peak Oil Check-In was produced by Relocalizing Vermont Productions in association with WGDR Plainfield.
You're listening to the Sagebrush Variety Show, sagebrushvariety.org. Political commentary and satire with an irreverent twist. From Boise, Idaho. You're listening to the Sagebrush Variety Show, political commentary and satire. Next up, we have Ukiah Digby for Coroner.
Last week on Ukiah Digby for Coroner...
Either the coroner's office isn't processing the organs, or they're not making the fees they should, or something else is happening to all that cash.
As much as I don't like the idea of shooting pudgy little birds with cute head ornamentation, I do look forward to the day when a person who is very good at murdering, bagging Chucker, and has administrative and public relations skills to boot, and happens to be an openly gay man, can be the president of, for instance, the Chucker Shooting Club.
Why, hello, my dear.
Lyndon, what could you possibly want?
Dinner and a movie with you, followed by, who knows?
You've convinced me that graft insider dealing and stealing from corpses are all wrong, even if that's been business as usual for some time. But now I really think you're overreacting.
No, it's my tooth! Ah!
And now, episode 8 of Ukiah Digby for Coroner. The scene is a dentist's office. There are framed pictures of angels with various prayers superimposed over them.
This dentist was a friend of my mother's. He doesn't usually come in after hours, but he's doing it as a favor to me.
Thanks. I'm glad you have connections. Really. But all this Christian paraphernalia makes me uneasy.
Don't be a religious bigot. You're here for dental work. What difference does it make that their beliefs are more mainstream than yours?
I don't have a problem with people finding comfort and guidance from religious faith. I just think there are people in this community with a variety of beliefs, and that signs reading "Only Jesus Saves" would seem judgmental or dismissive or accusatory to some people, and it just doesn't seem very professional.
Other people would probably be more worried about their teeth than reading the signs on the wall. Honestly, once you get in the dentist chair, you'll be just another mouth to them, and they'll just be another doctor to you.
Okay. Where's the receptionist, anyway?
Sorry, we were in back cleaning up. Since we're just opening for an emergency, it's just the dentist and me. I'm Burgundy, the hygienist. I take it you are our emergency call?
Yes.
You seem eager for your visit. That's a pleasant change.
Well, in this case, I guess I'm eager to do something about the pain. A couple of hours ago, it only hurt when I bit down, but now my tooth is starting to throb in place, and it's getting worse by the minute.
Don't worry, you'll feel better soon. I don't recall you ever coming to our office, sir. Do you have a regular dentist whose records we can get a hold of?
No.
Uh-oh. Are we afraid of dentists?
Not really, but I don't have insurance. I just try to take care of my teeth as best I can. And, well, sometimes I ignore stuff and hope it goes away, but I guess this time it didn't work.
No insurance?
No. I'm self-employed, like most people nowadays, it seems, and I can't afford my own insurance, also like most people nowadays.
You should have insurance.
Everybody should have insurance. If our leaders weren't so beholden to a system that just doesn't work, or to their campaign contributors in the insurance industry...
Well, I don't know. You know what a mess socialized medicine is.
That's a fallacy. Other countries, that aren't exactly socialist, I might add, have systems that work very well and actually save society as a whole a lot of money, not to mention suffering.
Well, let's save the political debate for later, hun.
Hun?
We're very good friends.
I think I need a root canal.
We'll let the dentist figure that out. Please fill out these forms and we'll be ready for you by the time you're finished. I'll be right back.
Thank you.
See? She didn't try to convert you or pass judgment on you in any way. In fact, I think you were a little judgmental towards her with your socialized medicine speech.
People need to confront the reality of the situation, Travis. And anyway, I was going to let her off easy, and I was just getting started when you interrupted me.
Let's get these forms filled out.
Fine. I guess I'm a little cranky because of the pain.
I understand. That's why we need to focus on dealing with your root canal or whatever it is.
Okay. Name? Hey, what's my phone number again? I always forget my own number.
461-0512?
Whoa, hold on. What the hell is this?
Shh, watch your language. They're probably sensitive about that kind of thing.
Oh, give me a break. Golly, what is this curious question? Do you engage in drug use or homosexual behavior? Why could they ever need to know that?
Maybe they need to know for medical reasons.
Travis, you know better. There's no medical reason for that question. They are either asking because they are nosy or because they think I'm at special risk for HIV, which assumes I engage in high-risk behavior, a highly prejudiced assumption, and at any rate, if they actually had medical knowledge in this office, they'd know there's no risk of HIV transmission from standard dental work. Let's just leave.
I don't want to be around you if you don't get your root canal before the pain gets even worse. I'll tell you what, don't fill out that section and file a complaint after all this is over.
Okay, but I will make an issue of this. And if one more thing happens...
Relax. I promise. Everything will be fine from here on in.
Okay. We're ready for you, sir. Come on back.
Great. Travis, would you come along for moral support?
Of course.
Well, I guess I can set up an extra chair if you want your friend with you.
Thanks. Don't worry. You won't even know I'm there.
Are we comfortable in that chair?
Comfortable enough.
Okay, open wide. Let's just set you up for the dental work. Just grunt if the pain becomes too much, and we'll slow down. Oh. Try to relax.
Hello, Mr. Digby. How are we today? I guess since your friend is here, we have an extra wide prayer circle. Let's all join hands. Hold on, I might as well get my gloves on now. Don't worry, Mr. Digby. You don't have to actually enunciate the prayer. Just speak along in your head. Don't take the drainage tube out. Honestly, no need to pray audibly.
Ukiah, just go with it. It won't kill you.
A dentist's prayer. Dear Lord, give us the wisdom and eye-hand coordination to perform this difficult dental work with accuracy, with a minimum of pain, and without the inadvertent exchange of body fluids of any kind. Help us to restore this man's teeth to a state where he can feed his body as well as his soul.
Oh, brother.
Yes, brother. Amen to that. But there's more prayer. Also, while you're at it, dear Lord, please grant this man and his companion freedom from life-dominating sin and sexual brokenness, and deliver him to the straight and narrow path so that when we make this man smile beautiful again, you also guide him to use that beauty to attract a suitable, meritable partner of the opposite sex.
This is too much.
Is there a problem?
Maybe you should put him under.
The scene is Ukiah Digby's campaign headquarters. Marlene and Digby are meeting for their weekly campaign meeting.
Have I got news for you?
My news is big. Maybe you should go first. But first, tell me what's up with the new hairdo. Are you dressing up like Princess Leia to wait online for tickets? I didn't know another Star Wars was coming out.
I just wanted to try something different. What's with your voice?
I had an emergency root canal last night. I really don't want to talk about it.
Well, I don't really like to hear about dental work anyway. It makes me afraid to go for my checkup, and I'm due for one as soon as our campaign is over.
Well, don't go to Dr. Moses Phoenix.
I'll take your word for it. What's your big news?
Well, before my tooth pain interrupted my date night with Travis, he happened to tell me that Umatilla is illegally trading body parts and for personal profit. Yeah, and she's stealing drugs from corpses, right? And county officials know all about it and haven't done a thing.
Yeah, that was my news. I spent all week going through paperwork in the county elections office unraveling that mystery. Why didn't Travis tell you before?
Good question. He says he didn't think it was a big deal, and since I didn't want to go negative, I don't know. I really read him the Riot Act until I was interrupted by a toothache.
Honestly, I don't know what you see in him.
Sometimes neither do I, but he's handsome.
You think so?
Yes. And he dresses well. I mean, not to sound shallow, he's funny. And laughing is very important in this life, you know. And he can be a good, serious conversationalist when he wants to be, or when I want him to be. And he's got the flattery thing down.
Yeah, but he's a hunting redneck, and you're a vegan radical. You have nothing in common.
He's not a redneck. He's just a regular Idahoan in some ways. And Marlene, the truth is, sometimes you don't have a lot of control over who you love. And as long as the relationship isn't harmful, maybe it's not worth fighting it.
I would never get serious about somebody whose values were so different from mine, not to mention totally askew.
In the words of the great communicator, Ronald Reagan, never say never.
I hate when you quote that idiot. It's great when you're campaigning and you want to get the attention of people who've written you off as a liberal, but between us, his presidency was a low point.
Maybe, but he was more progressive than the last supposedly liberal president we had.
You got me there. Anyway, now that we know what Kennewick is up to, and can I please say I told you so? Today happens to be the slowest media day of the week and perfect timing to hit the media. They're desperate for good copy, and I've prepared a statement that pulls out all the stops. We'll fax it to my media list, and then you can call everyone to follow up and offer sound bites, which I've taken the liberty of writing on these index cards. You can personalize them, but please stick close to the script.
You're the world's best campaign manager. I'm just glad you're on our side, because you've really got the killer instinct.
Please, don't say I have the killer instinct.
I meant it as a compliment.
I know. It's just that phrase reminds me of someone.
Why did you insist I come today? I told you, I think this debriefing meeting is a waste of time. I pay you to run my campaign, and I really need to buy new shoes. And if we'd met at our headquarters in Ye Olde Town Mall, I might still have had time to run over to Bella Crispo's afterward.
I need you here for a press event that I planned. Today is the slowest news day of the week, and the media will eat up this story.
What story?
I got a call from some local businessmen who are apparently great admirers of yours.
I'm glad you said businessmen, because the last admirers you recruited were a mixed blessing. Those punks for Kennewick were more like vandals for Kennewick. I'm not sure they're improving my reputation.
These guys are highly paid professionals. Coolidge Morgan and Mac Norman.
Is that right? You see, I do appeal to the super-educated MBA types, and not just the terminally confused. I bet they're very mature and distinguished gentlemen. What exactly is their business?
It's called Synaptotech. They are strategic profit opportunity analysts.
What does that mean?
Their website promises to ensure optimum positioning for long-term economic triangulation using cutting-edge research methodologies. But as far as I can tell, they just make up crap.
Sounds like some campaign managers I know.
Maybe so. But they've created the perception that their services are worth top dollar and perception is reality. Whether their clients make or lose money, the company's directors tell stockholders that without Synaptotech, things would be worse.
That's what political parties say, and we know that's a damned lie.
You're catching on.
So why is them coming here news?
They're bringing you a gift to demonstrate that they're the kind of company that gives back to the community.
Ooh, I like gifts.
Indeed.
What is it?
I don't know.
I used to like surprises until this campaign. Anyway, how does this convince TV viewers I'm the coroner to vote for?
They say it will make the coroner's office more efficient.
You idiot! That's like admitting I'm inefficient. You know I declare I'm dead right quick and turn a profit. For the county, that is.
Don't worry. Their soundbite is they're taking the most efficient office in the county and making it even more efficient, which is supposed to make them seem like financial wizards. They need this to go off well just as much as we do. Where are they? They're late.
Not a good sign.
There they are, just dandy. They're about 15 paces ahead of the camera crews. So much for getting everything straight before the event.
Well, I'm just going to the little girl's room to freshen up. I'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Coolidge Morgan, and this here is Mac Norman. Sorry we're late. We got stuck in traffic.
Yeah, we got to widen these roads. I know there's lots of loose talk about moving more people per square foot via transit, but that's just bunk.
Yeah, but it's a good theory, isn't it?
Hey, evolution is a theory too, but that doesn't mean it's true. I've done my research, and the fact is there's infinite funds for road widening because it means infinite contracts for builders and infinite opportunities for politicians to flex their budgetary muscles. But transit is just too damned expensive, and everybody loves driving, and you just can't get them into a bus or a train except when the roads need to be widened. Case closed.
I guess you have a good point there. I'll get back to you on that one.
You see, Lyndon, that's what makes us effective analysts. We don't shy away from vigorous debate.
Yeah, it's like when two really great baseball teams face off.
You've hit a home run with that one, Coolidge.
Thanks, man.
Don't let it go to your head, Morgan. You're still wrong about transit.
I hate to break this up, but the news crews will be in sound and camera range in approximately 4 seconds, and we've had no prep time.
Don't worry, we're great at winging it.
I hope so.
Hello, you must be the distinguished gentleman from Synaptotech. It's a pleasure to meet you both.
Hi, how are you? It's great to know you. We think you're tops. All right, awesome.
I'm Coolidge.
Why, if it isn't Breck Ridge, TV News' most revered news anchor. Glad you can make this press conference. I'm truly gratified we can get your channel to attend.
My pleasure, Lyndon. You always deliver a good story. Can we do this from the morgue instead of from your office? My camera crew says the light is better in there, and it will make for a better story.
Cool!
I am there!
I'll race ya.
Lyndon, these guys are kind of childish for men with gray hair.
Miss Kennewick, please, I implore you. No unscripted lines in front of the TV crew.
We have no script.
Don't remind me.
We could not be more excited about increasing Synaptotech's development in the community. We are committed not only to achieving our growth objectives, but we also wish to partner with the community and support it in any way that we can. As a show of support to the coroner's office, the company has purchased 2 stun guns from the leading manufacturer in the U.S., Acme Stun Guns, to be given to Umatilla Kennewick, the coroner, who our research has shown is the most efficient public official in the county to help make her even more efficient. I think it's important to our community that our officials are armed with the latest and best technologies. Besides, it's awesome. Watch!
Like a lightsaber.
Hardly like a lightsaber, but yes, we'll make a very good addition to the coroner's arsenal of essential tools.
I'm pleased to admit that while I've been named the most efficient department in the county by these highly qualified business analysts, that I am constantly looking for ways to make the coroner's office even more efficient Mac, would you please demonstrate how this stun gun will make our office even more efficient?
Let me do it. Check this out. See that corpse? You probably spent a lot of time and money with so-called pathologists making sure that guy was really dead before you could sign the certificate. But watch me perform this easy test. Oh my god! He jumped! He's not dead.
You moron! The electricity sent artificial signals to his neurons. Believe me, he was indeed dead.
Was? Wow! Do you realize the ramifications of this? The coroner's office can now bring people back to life! Imagine the profit!
My good man, this is not Reanimator. In black and white, nor the vulgar color remake. What you are doing is highly disrespectful, and the coroner's office does not condone this behavior.
Hey, Mac, maybe we could use the stun guns to get people to ride transit.
That's an intriguing idea, but there's still more profit for more of our clients by widening the road, so shut up!
You're funny when you pretend to be a curmudgeon.
Even I can't believe people actually give you their money.
Okay, I think we have what we need.
Let me help you guys pack up.
You doing physical labor?
Mind your own business. Listen, Brick, what kind of segment is this going to be?
I think you know. That was just too good for me not to slaughter you guys. Even the guys at corporate will approve of a hatchet job in this case.
I believe you owe me a favor?
I do, but I don't owe you this much.
Okay. Now you can not only pay it back, but put me in debt. Big debt. Fix this up. Make it a commercial for the Acme stun guns. The guys in corporate love an embedded commercial, even more than they love the kind of slapstick that rivets viewers. I mean, it probably wouldn't rivet viewers anyway. It's in very poor taste.
What's poor taste?
Come on. I know I can't win a standards of decency argument with you. I can give you even better stories about some of the other politicians I used to work for. And I have a real morality tale in the works on this Digby guy, plus a TV commercial that will really get the Puritans' blood boiling. We'll pay top dollar for the ads, plus a premium. And the associated stories are all exclusive to you. And listen, anyway, I was thinking, you and I need to get together more often at Le Fondue for steak and martinis. And if you want to go to the Verbena Hippo afterwards, that would be good too. For old time's sake. Come on.
Against my better judgment... Okay.
Breaking news from the county's only contested election this year. This one is turning into a hot one. The Digby campaign cites an obscure campaign law that prohibits elected officials from receiving gifts in exchange for legislation or services and seems to be implying a connection between modest handling fees for donated organs. Digby's campaign manager also accuses Kennewick of improper disposal of narcotics prescribed to those who died of terminal diseases. The Kennewick campaign responds that all unused drugs were turned over to the Department of Homeland Security under the section of the USA Patriot Act, which tracks down and apprehends narcotic users and dealers who may be funding terrorists. Kennewick would like to show disposal records, but for reasons of national security, those records must be kept secret from the public.
You mean terrorists are profiting from the morphine trade associated with the terminally ill?
Apparently, secret evidence supports that theory. An anonymous Homeland Security official told us that if the families of the terminally ill had nothing to hide, why were so many of them resistant to allowing federal agents to attend funeral services and conduct coffin searches and body cavity examinations?
Makes sense to me. I'm convinced. Will these evildoers stop at nothing? Hey, Breck, could the heat of this attack campaign be what's giving us this unseasonably hot October weather?
Well, Dana, we can't prove that scientifically, but is 89 in Boise, 87 in Meridian, 91 in Star, 88 in Eagle, 85 in Cuna, 87 in unincorporated Ada County, and a whopping 92 in Middleton? Good thing the Middleton power plants are there to provide power for all their air conditioner units that must be running. That's right, Dana. But if the Digby camp is heating things up, then the Kennewick campaign is keeping things cool by focusing on her support from the business community. In this clip, we see Synaptotech executives demonstrating the safe and proper use of one of the Acme stun guns they donated to the coroner's office.
Too bad we don't have audio. Word is, Synaptotech executive Mac Norman and Coroner Kennewick both give inspiring speeches.
They sure did, but unfortunately we had some trouble with the audio and had to edit the video quite a bit. But I'm glad we got what we did, because all's I know is that Acme stun gun demonstration has convinced me to buy at least one Acme brand stun gun. With the unbelievable sale at the Walmart just off the Beulah exit from the interstate, I'll probably get one for every member of my family.
It would make a great Christmas gift.
It sure does. And with Christmas just around the corner, supplies may not last for the last-minute shoppers. We'll be right back after this commercial break, which features a political advertisement from the Kennewick campaign that has already won awards from the Integrity and Politics Council.
Let's stop chatting and watch it.
Idaho is a live and let live state. Idaho is too great for hate. Then why do some candidates for public office hate Idaho's family values? Ukiah Digby hates family values coroner Umatilla Kennewick. Umatilla Kennewick, a coroner with a proven record as the family values coroner. A coroner who has worked to remove the influence of foreign languages, such as Latin, from all medical coroner's reports and death certificates. A coroner who has worked with the cemetery board to set standards prohibiting foreign language gravestones and requiring the mention of God and Jesus on all markers in local cemeteries. A coroner in the tradition of coroners who founded this country. And just who is this Ukiah Digby? A man who hasn't proven his family values and moral character. A man who does not hunt. A vegan. A soap opera actor. Do you really want to trust Idaho's corpses to a man who hasn't married or bred children? On Election Day, it is our duty as good Idahoans to ask the unpleasant question, a question we resent even being put into the position of having to ask, what would such a man do with dead bodies?
This message paid for by the Keep Kennewick Our Coroner Campaign Committee.
I am Umatilla Kennewick, and I approve this message.
I think I'm in shock, Martellin. I never dreamed this campaign would sink this low. I know Idahoans are too decent to fall for this. They'll see how heinous this is, and there's going to be a backlash. It has to be.
We have to make sure everyone hears our reply to this. We have to set the record straight. We're doing our own commercial. I'm calling the station right now.
I agree, completely. But how are we going to pay for television time?
We're going to have to fundraise aggressively. It's about time I taught you how to do that. But first I have to book ad time. Where'd I put that cell phone? Oh. Hello?
Why, hello, my dear.
Lyndon, I don't really want to talk to you right now. Or ever.
I don't believe that for a second. Sometimes I think I know you better than you know yourself. I guess that's why it's our destiny to be together. I'll be at our coffee shop tonight. Waiting.
It's not our coffee shop. But please, do wait for me, because you'll have to wait for all eternity if you think I'm showing up. And if you spend the rest of your days at the only table with only one person, you won't be able to commit as many atrocities.
Don't be so overwrought. I'm guessing you're upset over this ad, but you'll grow up soon and see this is all just politics. Hardly as important as our destiny together, as two of the shrewdest political mercenaries in all the land.
I have other calls to make.
Yes, yes, you'll be booking your own commercial time. Honestly, my dear, I can't wait to see what you come up with. Please, pull out all the stops. I love it when your killer instinct takes over.
Oh!
Ah, she hung up on me. She really, truly loves me.
Fighting with the opposition, Martellin?
He likes to call me and gloat. Oh, he is insufferable.
Sounds like this isn't your first argument. Why haven't you told me he's been harassing you? Maybe we could have gotten a restraining order or something.
It's a campaign manager thing. You wouldn't understand. Listen, I really have to book TV time before all the slots get filled.
Hello, I'd like to book ad time.
Great! We have prime time slots open almost every evening this month.
I'll book 16 between now and Election Day.
Did you say Election Day? Are these political ads?
Yes, I'm Ukiah Digby's campaign manager.
Well, in that case, I'm afraid we only have 3 available slots. Midnight on the next 3 Sundays.
What? That must be unconstitutional.
We don't think so. We can't have too many political ads or we'll lose viewership, and we have a God-given right to make a profit. Our policy is one of fair, proportional representation. Since Umatilla's political party holds 85% of all elected offices in this state, and Linden cut down book 20 slots, that leaves you 3. Do the math. Since your party hasn't gotten any votes, we really shouldn't give you any time. But we're willing to bend the rules and assume you might get a minority party share of votes. But since you have no proven record, it can't be prime time. So, shall we book you then?
I should boycott you, but since you're the only media outlet in the area with any viewership, I'll have to say yes. But you should know, the airwaves are public property, and I will take this to the Supreme Court if I have to.
Suit yourself.
Glad we could work out everyone's schedule. It's so nice to have you together for a simultaneous endorsement interview. It's a much better way to compare U.S. candidates. Thank you, Mr. Digby.
Pleasure is all mine, I'm sure.
And thank you, Miss Kennewick.
Please, Stan, call me Uma.
Oh, okay. I'd be delighted. Have you two actually met yet?
Indeed, we have. Good morning, Umatilla.
Hello, Mr. Digby.
Okay, now I want you both to know this isn't a debate. It's a friendly conversation, of course. Don't hold back on disagreeing, but no one expects you to score points. We are going to ask you some policy questions in a few moments, but first we'd like to start by getting a sense of the candidates as people.
As opposed to a sense of us as chickens?
Yes.
Sorry, just my little attempt at humor. You know, to lighten the tension.
Why, Mr. Digby, are you nervous about this little chat?
I'm not nervous.
It's okay to get the jitters the first time you get involved in any way at all with politics, with all the tough questions and public appearances and whatnot. I'm sure it's overwhelming, but I really do admire you for aiming so very, very high, Mr. Digby.
I've been involved in politics for many years. I've just never run for office before. And I've been making public appearances starting from the time I was a teenager up to this very moment as a musician, as an actor, a spokesperson for professional associations and nonprofit groups, and as a lobbyist. Please stop patronizing me. And what's with the Mr. Digby? Didn't we agree we were on a first-name basis?
Yes, we did, but that was before your campaign manager, Martellin Mascarpone, decided to take your campaign negative.
Martellin is my campaign manager, but I call the ultimate shots in my own campaign, just as I will when I'm coroner. And I'm the one who made the decision to confront your misuse of power. It's not going negative when we reveal the facts about your illegal body parts trading and narcotics theft. In fact, we were pretty nice about it, all things considered, never using any negative adjectives about you personally, but sticking to a dispassionate description of your deeds.
I'd say you went negative when you put out an ad about aspects of my personal life that have nothing to do with the coroner's office, and then implying that I and everyone who shares my sexual preference or even leisure activities are on par with necrophiliacs.
If I may interrupt here, phone and fax records indicate that your press release with allegations about Coroner Kennewick came out 3 hours before Coroner Kennewick's ad aired. So you started it, really.
Oh, I can't believe it. Stan, you can't honestly believe that they wrote, produced, and booked airtime for that ad in under 3 hours. And can't you see the difference between exposing a seated politician for documented instances of fraud and launching a campaign of insinuations on a person's personal character? I mean, you're supposed to be the liberal media. Don't you realize that what they did was hate-mongering?
That wasn't me. It was my campaign manager, Lyndon Cuttown. I must concur with you, Mr. Digby, that those ads were reprehensible. We've pulled the ads, and Mr. Cuttown has been reprimanded. I believe in personal loyalty, so I'm not firing Lyndon. I know he's been under a lot of stress due to your Ms. Mascarpone's constant harassment and dirty political tricks. However, I'm looking to add a communications director to my staff in order to take some of the stress off him.
Really? A new staff position? Now that is news. What kind of salary range are you thinking? I mean, as a journalist, researching political strategies, I was just wondering.
Oh, I don't know. Depends on qualifications, I guess.
Interesting.
Ms. Kennewick, I'm relieved to hear that you are at least fair-minded and compassionate enough to understand the problem with those ads.
Why, that's very nice of you to say. Please, call me Uma, Yukaya. You see, when we get together, face-to-face, everything can be worked out.
Fair-minded and compassionate.
Listen, I really don't have the patience for this petty bickering in this point of the campaign. Can we please get to the on-the-record portion of the interview?
Everything is a matter of record, Mr. Digby. Unless we tell you it's off the record and we feel we must keep our word, or unless you tell us it's off the record, there is some compelling reason why we might not want to risk you never talking to us again. Now, can you please give control of this interview back to me? I'm sorry, Miss Kenna. Uma. Mr. Digby, how can an actor be qualified for coroner?
I don't know, but an actor was President of the United States. Some say the most popular president of the United States ever, Ronald Reagan.
Yes, but he acted in westerns and anti-communist movies and family values tales involving cute little monkeys, not soap operas.
Were you going to ask me about the issues?
What about the amount of makeup you wear on camera? What have you got to hide?
Every successful politician since Nixon, when he lost because of all that visible sweat on TV, has been wearing plenty of makeup on camera, including Ronald Reagan.
You wear more makeup than Reagan, who wore just enough.
Are you going to ask me about the issues?
I have your website and your pamphlets, Mr. Digby, and Uma's record is pretty well known, so I guess that's all we need for today.
You've got to be kidding me.
This interview is adjourned. Now, Uma, since the interview is over and I'm taking off my journalist hat, so to speak, I was wondering if you could go for coffee with myself and just chat about some things. No on-record, off-record tricks.
Come on, this is such unbelievable bias.
Well, technically, I'm a columnist, and freelance at that, so the same rules don't apply to me. But at any rate, do you think I have no control over me? I'm pretty insulted that you think an educated and trained journalist such as myself doesn't have the professional discipline to separate his professional and personal life.
If you were so trained and educated, then how come you just use myself when you should have said me, and me when you should have said myself?
What?
Never mind.
Puffkey told me his endorsement of me is coming out this Sunday.
Excellent. Although the registry and columnary almost always endorses incumbents, one should never take such things for granted. Almost everyone who plans to vote gets the election issue, and many of them just go with the newspaper's choice. Even people who claim to hate that paper. We've done well.
I've done well. You had nothing to do with this one, and it's practically the only thing that's gone right this whole campaign. You're losing your touch.
Losing my touch? How can you say that? Yes, we've had some bad breaks, but if it weren't for me, you would be in even worse shape.
Seems you recently explained to me that when other people use that line, it's just bullshit to cover their disasters.
Well, in this case, it's the truth. And you're back up in the polls, at 54% last I checked, and steadily rising ever since we started airing the new ads.
I wanted to talk to you about that. My favorite uncle is gay, and I'm humiliated he saw that. I told him I wasn't responsible, and he pointed out it says, I'm Umatilla Kennewick, and I approve this message.
Our contract gives me carte blanche to use that clip as I see fit for the duration of the campaign.
Well, that was my mistake. When I signed that contract, I didn't know my campaign manager was a hate-mongering homophobe.
I'm not a homophobe. I'm perfectly fine with homosexuality as long as they don't wave it around in front of my face.
Wave what?
You know what I mean. My point is this is politics, and we have to use whatever tools we have available to accomplish our goal of winning.
I'm sorry, but you crossed the line, and if you actually knew what you were doing, you wouldn't need such cheap tricks.
Oh, suddenly we acquire ethics. When did that happen? After your last insider body parts trading payoff? Or while you were under the influence of stolen narcotics?
How dare you talk to me that way? You may still be the most sought-after campaign manager in town, but your star is falling, buddy boy. And 54% for a 28-year incumbent with my considerable war chest against a rank amateur is really pathetic. Unless you can show results, I'll tell a few of my colleagues down at the political square table meeting, and you'll be feeling pretty unemployed soon.
Let's not quarrel, Miss Kennewick. This has been a stressful campaign for both of us.
Well, I'm glad we agree, because I decided that we need Stan Popufki on our team to share the work of this campaign. Free up some time for you so you can focus on preempting any further f-ups. I'm hiring him as a public relations director. After his endorsement is printed this Sunday, he's clear of the bias zone, so he can come and work for us on Monday. We wouldn't want anyone to get the wrong idea that journalists kiss up to people in power just so they can eventually leave journalism for high-paying jobs with the people they used to report on. We pay him a lot more than that paper. I'm giving him the same amount as you, which means your salary will be cut in half.
In that case, perhaps we should be quarreling. In all my years as campaign manager, no candidate has ever gone behind my back to hire someone, and no one has ever asked me to share authority. This is an outrage, and I won't tolerate it.
It's my campaign and my war chest. Play nice and stay with the winning team, or you'll never do lunch in this town again.
Very well, then. But mark my words. You will regret this. I can promise you things will get worse for you as soon as Popufki comes on board.
Just do your job or I'll sue you for breach of contract. Anyhow, this time it's me telling you to have a little trust. You'll see, it'll all work out. You have no way of knowing things will get worse.
Oh, yes, I do.
Hello?
Marlene.
Stop calling me or I'll get a court order.
Don't hang up, Marlene. I realize I've crossed some lines, politically and personally, and I'd like to make amends.
Yeah, right.
No, I want to turn over a new leaf. There are some things about Umatilla Kennewick with some serious ethical problems. I should have quit her campaign long ago. I should have quit this corrupt political party, but I've let the power and prestige go to my head. I can't quit just yet. Kennewick has me in a binding contract, not to mention the fact that I'm up to my neck in debt for my obsession with creating the most complete science fiction DVD library on the planet.
You are serious, aren't you?
Yes, and until I can finally quit, I'm going to be a whistleblower.
I'm speechless.
I'm going to tell you something about Umatilla that will end her reign of fraud and terror.
I'm listening.
Have you heard about her father?
Yeah, less than a week before he would have almost certainly been reelected for his 7th term as coroner, he died in an accident so gruesome that the body was never found. Foul play was suspected because funds from his considerable war chest were withdrawn that very day. His body was never found, but in a cruel irony, it was his own daughter that finally had to declare him dead 7 years later.
That's a fairy tale. Casper Kennewick retired to the Bahamas because he knew he was about to be exposed by his political opponent for dozens of cases of fraud, most of which were directly related to his position as coroner. He faked his own death, and Umatilla's inheritance was that his party named her as his replacement, as a tribute to the old man, and the sympathy vote sealed the campaign for her. She was the only person who knew the truth. Whenever she gets a chance to go to some coroner's conference, she meets with dear old dad and plans out her own retirement and the succession her son.
How do you know all this?
3 martinis and she's dropping hints that only someone as devious as she would pick up on, which sadly means me. But I will change. I swear.
Aww.
I took those clues, did a little digging, and was going to hold on to that information for blackmail.
but now I want to go towards changing the status quo. I'll give you the numbers of the Swiss bank accounts, her father's address, and the address of the bungalow Matilda's having built with money stolen from public funds, and a tape-recorded message she has prepared for his son, for his ears only, to be heard upon her death. Now go, change the world.
Thanks.
One more thing, Martellin?
Yes?
When all this is over, maybe you'd give me another chance. Perhaps you can come over and see my science fiction library. I have a DVD of The Day the Earth Stood Still with the original director's cut, rare outtakes, and the short, low-budget version that Robert Wise made as a film student.
Of course, Lyndon. I love that movie, and everybody deserves a second chance. Bye.
Oh, what a performance! I should get a Saturn Award from the Academy of Science Fiction for that one. Although it does help that she truly is strangely irresistible. And off she goes now to do my bidding. I can frame Popovsky for the leak, but winning the race after this scandal breaks will take every trick in my bag, dirty and otherwise, and it will be my crowning achievement. My stock as a political strategist will rise, and I will demand exorbitant, obscenely exorbitant fees. And I will prove Henry Kissinger's truism that power is the greatest aphrodisiac when Marlene falls hopelessly under my spell. Best of all, Umatilla Alkiewicz will pay for her betrayal with the sentence of having to serve a crime-free term as coroner, thanks to me, and her retirement plan will be dashed to bits. And she will thank me.
I'm Stan Popovsky, interim editorial director and columnist for the Idaho Columnarian Registry. This is my endorsement for this year's contested election. After extensive issue-based research and some psychological profiling of the two candidates for county coroner, Umatilla Kennewick and Ukiah Digby, I've decided to endorse Umatilla Kennewick. Those who follow local politics might think that a contest between a longtime incumbent of Kennewick's stature and track record against a marginal neophyte would be a no-brainer. However, Digby manages to make some valid points. Allegations of illegal body parts trading by Kennewick, as well as narcotics theft, seem to have some traction. Marginal candidates such as Digby serve a function in that they raise issues that keep leaders like Kennewick on their toes. While Digby is bold in confronting inappropriate politics, he can be strident and argumentative. Hardly someone the public can trust to build consensus with the many other county leaders and departments who don't appreciate being badgered about every stray receipt for ice or paper cups. By contrast, in just a few minutes of meeting in the Columnary's editorial's office, Umatilla found resolution to several of Mr. Digby's complaints. In that same session, Digby described Ms. Kennewick as fair-minded and compassionate. We agree. Digby has done his job by reminding Umatilla of her higher calling as coroner, and we should all be grateful to him for that. Now it's time for the voter to do their job and cast a ballot for Umatilla Kennewick so that she can continue the job she has performed so well for the past 28 years.
Tune in next week for the next episode of Ukiah Digby for Coroner on the Sagebrush Variety Show. This week's Sagebrush Variety Show was conceived, written, performed, and produced by Robert McMinn, Kevin Bayhouse, April Hoy, and Gwen Sankirico, and was funded in part by a grant from the Green Institute. For more information on the content discussed on this program, visit our website at sagebrushvariety.org. Write to us at sagebrush@radioboise.org. Thanks for listening to the Sagebrush Variety Show.